Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Rafael Borras, Undersecretary for Management at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Also joining our conversation from IBM is George Kruiser.
You know, as you talked about the acquisition cycle and becoming more nimble in the upfront, I'd like to talk a little bit about the partnering and collaboration involved in really trying to drive technology, both the speed of technology that you get in and the innovation and driving innovation, and your thoughts around the strategies to use collaboration in order to drive innovation.
Well, we spend a lot of money on IT in the department, and we work with all of industry. Probably the first thing I'd say is very important to have a good open dialogue with industry. Industry needs to better understand our needs. We need to understand what we can expect in return. That kind of conversation is often difficult to have. There are all kinds of procurement regulations that govern how we can talk and where we can talk. But, you know, it's not impossible. You know, I've experienced some of this in the past. In my previous time in the federal government with GSA specifically, we had a quality partnership council where we worked very closely with the furniture industry. This was not a, you know, we didn't have procurement conversations. We talked about where the industry was going. We talked about where the federal workplace was evolving. Think about this is late 90s. So a lot of work was being done. We were talking about different ways to work. We were talking about the use of different technologies back in the late 90s. How do we evolve the workplace to support the new worker, the knowledge worker, as the term was coined, I believe, back in the 1950s. But I can't remember his name, but it was a Harlan somebody or other who wrote a book on knowledge management. That forum provided us the opportunity to have these kinds of conversations, very big picture, very grandiose notions of where we were evolving as a workforce, as a workplace. So we were thinking already ahead of the mobile workplace, modular workplaces, thinking about different kinds of the applications of different technology. You know, today in sort of the iPad world, we take for granted that you can just, you know, run to a coffee shop with your iPad and you can connect and you can be productive. We weren't quite there yet. We were still married to our desktops. Our laptops were still 9-10 pounders. But that's where we imagine the future. And that was the real powerful part of this Quality Partnership Council, where we really imagined the future of the workplace and how we wanted our workers to be more productive and what tools they were going to need and what that work environment needed to be. Well, same thing for technology. You know, we need to have a good, safe place where we can imagine the future. There are so many, you know, technology, the pace of technology is so rapid. It continues to be so rapid. I can't remember the exact statistic, but, you know, the amount of innovation that's taken place in the last 50 years probably exceeds the innovation that took place in all of mankind before that. There's some statistic like that. That's tough for any one person, let alone any one firm, let alone any one industry to keep up with. So we have to find good ways to have these conversations where, again, we're imagining the future, we're talking about innovation. But we have to do it holistically. We just can't do it with one sector or one part of industry, large businesses. You know, we're fond of saying that small businesses drive innovation in this country. So how do we find good ways to keep small business viable? How do we keep them engaged? How do we learn from them as well? How do we benefit from the partnership? Because there's many partnerships between large and small firms. How do we maintain that synergy? One of the things we're really proud of in the Department of Homeland Security is our ability to attract a good cross-section of business into the department. We have tremendous numbers when it comes to small business contracting. We have tremendous numbers when it comes to veteran-owned business contracting. We have tremendous numbers when it comes to women-owned business contracting. We're doing that in all. Why we're not sacrificing any of the $13 billion or so that we're spending on an annual basis. But how are we maximizing that relationship? And I'm not sure that we are yet. So we have to find better ways to dialogue and be able to learn from each other. I need to know industry's capabilities. Industry needs to know my requirements. And how do we bring that together so that we are better, again, I'm going to keep on using the same term, so I'm a better steward of the taxpayers' money.
Raphael, I'll close. My final question, I'll bring it back to the people itself. And, you know, as the mission to do a better and better job at securing the homeland, with that is an ever-changing skill set that's needed in order to really figure out the new threats and stop them before they hurt us. Talk a little bit about your thinking as you go into the future of what that workforce is going to look like as we evolve from a management, financial, human capital, technology perspective.
You know, we're seeing that in so many areas right now, whether it's the border, and people much, much smarter than I am are spending good time thinking about what's the right mix of, you know, human capital assets and technology to secure our border. We're facing that at the airports every day with what's the right mix of human intervention with transportation security officers and machinery, whether they be imaging, whether they be the other screening devices. What's the right mix? What's the right way to secure our aviation security assets? Is it with more people? Is it with less people? Is it with more technology? Is it with behavioral detection? There are so many things going on right now, moving so fast, that we're taking our cues internally from our operators who are doing good research. They're working with our science and technology function within the department, again, to begin to ask these same questions. What is aviation security in 10 years from now? What is border security 10, 15 years from now? And what are going to be both the physical assets and the human assets that we're going to need to be able to support that? I didn't bring my crystal ball. I can't predict what that is right now. But we're going to follow that very, very closely and make sure that working with our other federal partners, with OPM and OMB and all the other stakeholders, that we're thinking about this, we're adequately planning for tomorrow's workforce. Whether it's going to be more resource intensive or less intensive, I can't tell you today. But this is among the most important questions that we have to face in our immediate future at Homeland Security.
Raphael, not to bring out the crystal ball again, but I want to keep us on that kind of idea of anticipation, maybe is the better word for it. How do you anticipate the future? And what are some of the opportunities and challenges you're anticipating as you lead the management directorate at DHS?
Well, I'll respond this way. Rather than talk about anticipate, what we're looking for is predictive tools. You know, I believe that we can develop diagnostic or predictive tools that look at the health of our programs, look at the health of our acquisitions, and give us a predictive insight into programs that are beginning to vector or veer off track. So I'm very, very interested in the predictive capability of our tools. It's far too late when a program shows up in breach, 30%, 40% over budget, or 30, 40% behind schedule. And we're in a reactive mode, and we're trying to figure out how to bring that program back into alignment. I much rather be in the predictive or diagnostic mode of being able to assess on a periodic basis the health of programs and be able to then add value, because that's the real trick. It's one thing to sort of be the police officer for the good health of programs. But I really want to be in the I'm here to help you business. So if we can develop the predictive tools, and we're talking about these things, we're looking at prototypes right now. Concurrent with that, my responsibility is to find ways to help programs succeed. Again, it's a very different way to talk about it. I don't want to just play gotcha. I want to be able to catch you before you've gotten so ill that we can't help you. I want to catch you early, and then I want to help you get better. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. You know, some departments use a combination of what I would call a center of excellence model, where they co-locate, even virtually, certain kinds of expertise, skill sets, take cost estimating, for example. It could be anything. Many programs have a real deficiency in the skill sets that allow them to really do good cost estimating. What is this program going to cost me? Am I within my cost baseline? Am I veering off? That's a difficult skill set to maintain. We can do that virtually with a center of excellence within the department where you can, again, without physically co-locating people, but you can identify all your cost estimators, create a network. You can support them and train them so they can be a resource back to our organizational components. Those are ways to maximize our resources without creating a lot of new ones. Because again, we're going to be entering a very, very difficult time, and the value proposition to create new resources, new billets, is going to be challenged. So how do I make best use of what we have right now in the department?
And to pick up on that, how do past accomplishments provide a guide for future success in your mind?
My notion is this. We're going to constantly evolve. We're going to continue to learn. And you can't be afraid to fail. But we do have to be much, much better about managing and mitigating risk. And that begins at the outset of identifying what is your risk profile. How risky is this venture? That's not a question we often ask in government. Again, because we don't treat the dollars we spend the way I suggest we could, as investments. So like with any other investment, what's my investment portfolio? How risky is it? How have I distributed those investments between high risk and low risk and medium risk? And those programs require different attention. Now, I'd like to think that we get so good and we get so smart that we would greatly minimize high risk investments, because we'll be able to mitigate them much earlier, even before we go forward with them. Again, if I look at some of the programs that have not succeeded, looking backwards, one could argue the way they were established, the risk profile was too high for the department. So we need to get much better at identifying our risk, mitigating it, or managing it. Part of the way we're going to get there is we want to have a better trained workforce. We've talked about the human capital needs, but I need to have the predictive and diagnostic tools that give us better insight into the health of programs as they're unfolding. I don't want to play gotcha.
So as our last question, I often ask my guests, what advice would you give someone who is interested in a career in public service?
It's the best career. People come into the public service for all kinds of different reasons. A lot of people ask me, why did I come back into public service? And I really answer it by, how could I not? How could I pass up an opportunity both to serve my country, to practice my craft, to do it in a place that arguably, to me anyway, has the most important mission of all the civilian agencies in the federal government? It's almost like a calling. It's so important. There are trade-offs between going into either the nonprofit, the for-profit, or the public sector. But I think it starts with wanting to do it. You know, I'm here because I want to do it. So I say to the young people quite often, in addition to, if you want to get better, you got to get good first. I always say to them at the outset, you have to want to. You know, in Spanish we say, you have to have ganas. You have to have that desire. If you don't have it, you can't manufacture it.
Rafael, that's terrific advice. I want to thank you for joining us today. But more importantly, George and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the invitation to be here. I enjoyed it immensely.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Rafael Boris, Undersecretary for Management at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. My co-host from IBM has been George Cruiser. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.